A family is tormented by demonic spirits determined to take their children.
Oh, that's a scary movie is here.
That was creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't know I could do a pitch perfect Carol Ann voice?
I thought you were going to say, like, this podcast is clean.
Oh, that would have been good. all good choices, man. Because, like, this is, I think it's been a minute since we've done a classic.
Yes.
And anyway, this is, oh, that's a scary movie.
Yeah, hi, welcome.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Ashley. And what did we watch this week?
This week we watched Poltergeist, the OG, 1982's yeah. Poltergeist, directed by Toby Hooper. Or was it?
Sort of.
Direct screenplay by Steven Spielberg, Michael Grice, Mark Victor, starring Jo Beth Williams, Craig T. Nelson, Beatrice Strait, and Heather O'Rourke. This movie.
I mean,
this was another one where I was a little intimidated, honestly, sure, to cover it, because it's a perfect film.
It's so good. It's so movie. Good. And I remember watching it when I was young. I told you I first mm-hmm. watched it at a slumber party.
Sure.
Shout out to my friend Stephanie, who's been my friend since kindergarten.
Sure.
We watched it at her house, and it scared the ever living out of me.
Yeah.
But also it's not that scary as an adult.
I don't know. I think it plays on different fears when you're an adult.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, fears of, like, your family being in danger,
sure,
and losing your home and your yeah, livelihood,
and children getting sucked into a closet.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
And this was, Poltergeist was a movie that, I think I told you this when we were watching it, that, like, I saw the last 15 minutes first. Mm-hmm. Like, the last 15 minutes of this movie is the clown attack, the pool, the house exploding or yeah. imploding. And I literally switched the TV to HBO when the clown attacked.
That's insane.
And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I, like, hit, I like, found out as the credits were rolling that it was Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. And I told my parents, I was like, I saw part of Poltergeist today. And they told me, oh, that, yeah, you can probably watch that whole thing. It's rated PG.
It's rated PG.
And I said, what the fuck? And I didn't say what the fuck, but I just could not believe it. But also, this was pre-PG-13.
Right.
And this is one of those movies that kind of led to that rating, along with Temple of Doom,
mm-hmm.
both Spielberg films.
Right.
And it was originally going to be rated R, and he essentially went to them and said, Come on.
It's a kid's movie,
it's
right?
It's a kid's movie.
There's a clown.
A guy pulls his face off.
It's totally, it's cute. It's like claymation.
Absolutely. And I remember from that day on, I was like, because this was also when I didn't have, you know, access to every movie.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, the next time it's on HBO, which luckily HBO reruns the same things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was just so excited to finally, like, sit down, watch Poltergeist. I think I was like 11 when mm-hmm. I saw this for the first time, and it just blew my mind.
I think that's the age that I was, like, in middle school.
Because it kind of taps into the same sort of thing that E.T. does, right? Where it's like your home life being disrupted and, like,
yeah.
You know, kids in peril, and it's a little
lot
scary,
like
E.T. and
as well.
Yeah. there's probably a very good reason for that. So I guess up top, we should get into one of the things we kind of hinted at in our last episode, is this is a very controversial movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, lots of lore attached to this movie, lots of things that happen.
And we'll, like, kind of, you know, dip in and out as we go along, because there's certain things for certain scenes.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are deaths attached to this franchise, actors who, mm-hmm. like, passed away very shortly after completing one of these.
Yeah.
And other weird things that happened on set. But behind the scenes, like, the way this movie came to be is just so strange.
Right.
Because Steven Spielberg wanted to follow up Close Encounters with basically its, like, moral and tonal opposite. Mm-hmm. So whereas Close Encounters is very much about the wonder and excitement of first contact, he wanted to do a movie that was about a family being terrorized by horrible aliens.
Yeah.
And this movie would have been called Night Skies. And around that time, he started talking to his friend Toby Hooper about making it. Mm-hmm. Because he was like, hey, you're a horror guy. You've got more experience with horror. Toby Hooper, we previously discussed on our mm-hmm. Texas Chainsaw Massacre episode. And an episode, a movie that I still don't think you've forgiven me for making you watch.
I mean, I didn't hate it. It's not Leprechaun.
It's not Leprechaun. And that's like the litmus test at this point. But so they were kind of developing this idea. Spielberg was talking with makeup artist and special effects wizard extraordinaire Rick Baker about creating monsters for this movie. And then he went off to go shoot Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. And while he was off shooting it in this like traumatic shooting experience, I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard any of the stories behind the scenes of Raiders.
No, I haven't.
Basically, the whole cast and crew got dysentery.
Oh, no.
While they were shooting in Tunisia. That's why there's that amazing scene where Indy just shoots the guy with the sword.
Sure.
There was a whole fight scene choreographed, and Harrison Ford, who'd been shitting his guts out all morning, went up to Steven Spielberg and said, "What if I just shoot him?"
I love it.
And it becomes one of the best moments in movie history.
Yeah. Amazing.
But so Spielberg's like sick and showing like the screenplay for Night Skies to Harrison Ford's girlfriend at the time, Melissa mm-hmm. Matheson. And she really latched on to the part of the story that involved a little boy befriending the nice one of the invaders.
Yeah.
And so Spielberg was like, "You're right. This is not the kind of story I want to tell. I want to tell like a coming of age story, something sweeter." And that's how E.T. came about.
Sure.
And so so the studio was not happy when he came back and said, "I know we've already spent $1 million on Night Skies, but I think this movie's gonna be a hit. Like mm-hmm. I just feel it. This is a good movie." And they were like, "Well, we still want a horror movie." And he's like, "Oh, no, I got your family in peril story. I got my buddy Toby wants to do a ghost movie."
Sure.
And so they started developing Poltergeist. And to this day, this year is the 40th anniversary of Poltergeist.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Well, yeah, 1982.
it all adds up.
Math.
To this day, there is disagreement over whether the movie was directed by Steven Spielberg or Toby Hooper.
I thought this was a Spielberg movie before we decided to do it for the show, and I started looking
That's
into it.
That's so interesting.
In my brain, it was a Spielberg movie because it looks like a
it
Spielberg
does,
movie.
And feels Spielberg like a
movie. The only Toby Hooper movie I've seen is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well,
and this movie looks is nothing.
And I think that there's a good well, and that's the thing is like at this point Toby Hooper had directed Texas Chainsaw, mm-hmm. Eaten Alive, and The Funhouse, all three of which are scrappy low budget slasher movies.
Yeah.
And so this was like
this is so polished.
His graduation into cinematography by Matthew Linetti, the music by Jerry Goldsmith is a legend. I mean, a lot of that does so much lifting there.
It just feels like a Spielberg
it does.
Movie to me. Like it just
it's whimsical,
it
but also scary
feeling.
And exciting, yeah. and it gets really into the family dynamics. And what was interesting was there are even from the people who worked on the movie, there were mm-hmm. varying accounts of who was in charge.
Sure.
Toby Hooper is pretty sure in a couple of interviews over the years he mentioned that there was an LA Times piece where a reporter visited the set and mentioned that he saw Spielberg directing some second unit stuff. So Spielberg was like very hands-on with a lot of like the special effects sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And Hooper is like pretty sure that's kind of where it started. So people were like, "Well, wait, if Toby Hooper wasn't on set, Spielberg was, and they mm-hmm. were doing, this big, set piece." At the time he said, "It's a real shame because there was Oscar buzz around the movie."
Mm.
And he's like, "Those rumors have ruined any chance I have of like being nominated for best director."
Sure. I mean, it does suck for Toby Hooper. Like it really does.
And even like when the movie came out, the reviews were like Vincent Canby of the New York Times was said in the review, like, "It's unclear who actually made this movie, but it feels more like Spielberg."
I mean, I feel bad saying it, but it does. Like
it does.
It's undeniably like it feels just like E.T. to me. Like,
yeah, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that I think comes from the storytelling sensibilities, but also like the Directors Guild of America fined MGM $15,000 for like not putting Toby Hooper, giving him proper credit, because even the original posters were like Steven Spielberg presents Poltergeist.
Oh wow.
You know, and there were all the rumors. It got to the point where, like, the week the movie opened, Spielberg wrote an open letter that was published in the Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
That was basically like, I think people have misinterpreted our working relationship. Yeah.
How awkward. Yeah.
And also in interviews, he said basically like, you know, this is why I will never direct. I will never co-write a movie that I don't direct in the future. Sure. Because I am very hands-on. I want to be in charge.
I don't know how to feel about this situation.
It's,
you know,
so
I mean?
Strange,
like,
right?
I don't know. Like, part of me wants to be mad at Spielberg.
Well,
like just let it
sure.
go, bro.
Right.
Like, if you wrote it and you asked this guy to direct it, that's the job.
But he said, he was basically like, if Toby had told me at any point, you know, fuck off, I would have.
Sure.
But also,
what do you,
you
have though?
But also you have to look at it from the perspective of, this is a young filmmaker. Mm-hmm. They're both young filmmakers, but, and this is what's going to make you fucking sick. When this movie comes out, Spielberg is 36 years old.
Oh, wow.
And he has directed Jaws.
Oh, I know.
Close Encounters, yep. Raiders, and he's finishing production on E.T.
Some of my favorite movies of all time.
This is a man at the height of his powers who is used to
a year older
making
than
his stories come to
it.
Life. Yeah. Like, one of the cameramen just a few years ago said, I think that was a Steven Spielberg picture. Zelda Rubinstein said Steven directed all 6 days I was on set. And she, like, she also intimated that, like, Toby Hooper was on some kind of substances while she was there. But, like, other cast members have been like, why would Zelda say that?
That's
Toby
weird.
Was so kind to her, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so it is this weird thing. I think the person who's summed it up the best is director Mick Garris, who was friends with all of those guys. You know, he kind of, like, got all the horror guys together back in the day. And he said, he was basically like, this is Toby's first studio movie. He's on a big sound stage, and he says, Steven Spielberg had written the shooting script, was on the set, and was producing. And Spielberg is a consummate filmmaker, and he lives and breathes his movies. And yes, I could see him climb on the camera and say, maybe we should push in on a two shot here, or do this, do that. And Toby would be watching. Mm-hmm. Toby always called action and cut. Toby had been deeply involved. But Steven is a guy who will come in and call the shots. And if you're on your first studio film, you're not going to say, no,
maybe
sir,
not.
Mr. Director of Jaws.
Sure.
So I think, if anything, they should have been given like a co-directing credit, but the Directors Guild wouldn't allow that. But it does feel, I mean, you can really feel Spielberg all over this movie.
Yeah.
And I say this as someone who likes Toby Hooper's films, but this just has never felt like a Toby Hooper movie to me. I believe that they were both heavily involved, but I think also it does come down to Spielberg probably should have taken a step back. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But,
you can't. I feel like when you've got someone more experienced like that,
right.
Well, I would have stepped back if they asked me to. Well, they're not going to ask you.
But like, there's this exceptional, I'll link it in the show notes, but there's this exceptional interview with this article by Mel Magazine that was essentially, the conclusion was, it's hard to tell if Spielberg saved this movie or killed, you know, an interesting vision that we could have seen.
Yeah.
But it's hard to argue with the final product being fucking great.
It's so great. It's so, like, I can't find anything wrong with this movie.
No.
Like, it's so good.
So why don't we just get into
just
it?
Get into
this
it.
Is maybe the longest prelude we've
I
ever
know,
done.
Right?
But it's just, this is such a momentous film. And just to prove how momentous it is, it starts with the Star Spangled Banner.
Right. It starts with something that does not happen anymore.
Yet, my note is TV used to end.
That's what I was like. This is a thing that used to happen.
Yeah.
Like the TV. So let me explain what would happen for those of you that don't know. Because
yeah,
honestly,
yeah,
this was before my time as well. I just know that it.
Sure.
I know. You
we
know,
grew up when infomercials started late
yes.
at night or
do,
Nick at Night.
Do you know how I knew that this happened?
Mm.
Because I loved the movie Curly Sue. And this
sure.
also happens in Curly Sue where the TV just ends
I,
for the
I
night.
Knew about it because of Garfield's Halloween Adventure, the animated. Because it ends with like this static screen and then it comes up on the Binky the Clown show. And
that's
I was like,
funny.
Oh, TV just used to stop.
It would just stop. So like at a certain point at night, I don't know, like midnight or something.
Yeah.
Broadcasting would just stop altogether. And they would play the national anthem and it would
say,
just
good
be
night.
Yeah, and it would just be static until TV picked up the next morning.
Well, and it's so brilliant because we open on these shots of Craig T. Nelson as Steve,
who I love him so great. Much.
And like we're just going to be like love festing on all of the actors in this movie. But like Craig T. Nelson as Steve Freeling asleep next to the TV. We like, and there's strobing in the room, and you kind of start to realize that it's not necessarily all from the static,
right?
And it's night, and we watch the dog go to. This also feels very Spielberg. We watch
the dog
go to each person in the house.
Everybody steals some potato chips.
It's a great introduction. Yeah. The dog who was named what, Buzz something?
I don't know.
E-Buzz.
Something like that.
Yeah. What a weird name.
But I also think that this is a very clever way of, like, showing us the house and showing us the different characters. We get the great shot of the staircase, right? Which I like.
You're obsessed with staircases.
I have listened back to a couple of our episodes and I did not realize how big of a boner I get for architecture, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You had a lot of talk. You wanted to talk about the Myers house being like this old like ranch style house.
I loved the staircase and the big tree coming out of it. Yeah, it's great.
and we see Heather O'Rourke as Carol Ann go down to the television,
adorable,
start talking to it, and you know, I can't hear you, hello, like she's trying to like get whatever she's hearing to listen.
So creepy.
And this is where, well, I think so the family starts to gather around. Steve looks really nervous and confused, and this is the part that scares me. Five.
Yes, I just got chill bumps. Chill bumps?
Because it's asking her how old she is.
I couldn't, like, during this scene, I was thinking, I would be shitting myself if that was my child answering.
So scary.
Answering questions that I couldn't hear.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But they all kind of write it off as sleepwalking. And we get our kind of sitcom opening credits with Jerry Goldsmith's exceptional score. But, like, we're seeing the whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We're following a guy who's like spilling beer everywhere.
Yep.
If someone comes into my house with exploding beers,
go outside.
Well, the person and the beers are going right in the trash.
And there's a guy dressed like this is his like final stop before he goes like fishing for the day.
Sure.
He's wearing like a vest and like a bucket hat.
All I kept thinking about were the SNL like Tostitos commercials where it's like the guys just go fumble,
and they're all perfectly positioned like sorority girls, like in like so you can see all of them and they're watching the game,
but they all got their little outfits.
But then it cuts to Mr. Rogers
and there's a lot of fun comedy in this that does actually feel just as much Toby Hooper as it does Spielberg to me. Because like the argument with the neighbor because their remote is on the same frequency or they're like using the same cable box, like, is really funny.
I don't even understand how that works.
He's like, my kids want to watch Mr. Rogers. My favorite bit of that is it flips over to Mr. Rogers and one of the dudes goes, who's this guy?
I love it.
But yeah, we're like rapidly introduced to everybody. You kept calling the brother a nerd.
Okay, this kid was the biggest nerd. Because every time they showed him, he had something even more nerdier. It's
right.
Like,
every establishing shot. Because we see the Empire Strikes Back bedsheets, which I owned as a kid.
Sure. And then he's reading some like Captain America comic.
I looked it up. He's reading Captain America number 259. story is called The Rite of Passage. And the description, according to Comic Vine, the Star-Spangled Avenger is sent to go find the son of Ray Coulson, who's recently joined a biker gang.
Ooh.
Is it here that Captain America learns that Doc Ock has been... It is here.
Oh, it is here.
It is here that Captain America learns that Doc Ock has been following him. Can Cap defeat Doc Ock and the gang without his shield?
I thought Doc Ock was Spider-Man.
He is? Well, no, Doc Ock... Well, actually, Doc Ock was Spider-Man for a little bit because he, with the help of the human brain, the living brain, I apologize, did swap minds with Peter Parker. It was a big controversial storyline, but he became the superior Spider-Man started living his life, fell in love with Mary Jane, learned to be a hero, fought in the Spider-Verse, and then eventually had to give up his body.
Cool.
So, but anyway, big time for Dr. Octopus has had quite a history. But yeah, no, we see his comic books. There's a Darth Vader over his shoulder that was actually pointed out. I was like, that's actually an action figure holder. He has a poster for Alien on the wall. He's got like 3 Star Wars posters. The kid rules. I think Robbie's cool.
Sure. I bet you do. This is also the point where I wrote, people just be living around mountains. Like, do you remember when I went on that hole?
Yeah. You're like, can you imagine looking outside and there's mountains?
There's mountains?
Like the Paramount logo is behind your house?
Like, it kills me that this neighborhood is just, like, around mountains.
Just around them. Yes. Yeah, it did really bug you.
No, I loved it. Like, I wish I could.
No, you're jealous.
I am very jealous.
Yeah. This is also, my next note is bird funeral. Which is pretty rough. Tweety. They find Tweety dead, or we meet Jo Beth Williams as Diane Freeling, who is
incredible.
This is an Oscar worthy performance.
And I have to say, like, as an 11-year-old watching this, yeah, I was very judgmental of her as a mother, and I was like, she's the worst. And now I am her.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. No, she rules. She's so great. And she finds Tweety dead. I will say, we've both said, I will say. The one thing that I will give her some pushback on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you flush a dead bird?
Okay. No, that
can,
was...
And can... Were toilets stronger back then?
I don't think so. I don't know what she was thinking. I do love her line where she's like, damn it, Tweety, why couldn't you wait for a school day?
Right, that's
that
good.
That's great. But yeah, she carries Tweety over to the toilet. Carol Ann sees her right before she tries to flush him down, which would have ended poorly, I would imagine.
Well, there's like these great, like we get the whole funeral sequence. She's... Carol Ann wants like Tweety to be comfy in the cigar box.
The stuff that she puts in the box.
She puts a rose in there so it doesn't smell like cigars.
Yeah.
She puts a little picture for when he's lonely. And then she puts a little like washcloth over his head for when it's nighttime.
It's so sweet.
And she breaks my heart. Like, she's so incredible.
And the switch is so good where she's like, can I have a goldfish now?
Right. Meanwhile, Robbie's climbing the tree. I'm a sucker. I mean, we know from the Freaky episode and Child's Play, I'm a sucker for ominous clouds.
Sure.
Oh,
yeah. The Mary Poppins clouds start to like roll in.
There's some really like the effects in this movie, for the most part, hold up really well.
I think
so. Even when they're like a little cartoonish, they're like, they kind of hit that uncanny valley of like, mm-hmm, it still totally works for me.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Ghostbusters. Like, I think a lot of those effects still look great. And we get the feeling that Carol Ann is a nurturer. I mean, she's taking care of...
Come and get it.
She's feeding the hell out of those fish.
So cute.
And this is where I wrote, I owned so much of the shit Robbie has in his room. And then we get to kind of what you were talking about. The parents, like, smoking a joint, being chill as hell.
They're just, like, rolling
Diane's
a
just
joint.
Rolling a joint. He's reading a book about Reagan.
Yeah. And what is she's telling a story about how she was sleepwalking and ended up in somebody's car.
Yes. Yeah. And we're like, I'm just like, I need to know everything else that happened.
I want to know your life.
She's like, cracking up about it. Steve does a couple push-ups on the bed.
He does.
And then he does this before and after bit with his guts, where he's like,
so cute.
The reason this movie works is because we don't even spend a ton of time getting to know them before the haunting, but they are it's so well acted. We get these cute little moments like this. And everyone, like, I believe this family relationship.
Oh, and we didn't mention the sister. There's an older sister who's always eating.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that until I rewatched it. But yeah, there's like a running thing where she's constantly like, she's got like celery sticks and apples. And yeah, Dana Freeling, played by Dominic Dunn, who was murdered.
Yeah.
Like
right after this?
Right after this, yeah.
Yeah, by her boyfriend.
Yeah, and just a couple of months after the movie came out, She's so good in this too. She's really good. She's so funny. She has some really funny lines that she kind of underplays. Mm-hmm. There's a bit towards the end of the movie where the mom's like, we're going to go stay on the Holiday Inn over here. And she goes, yeah, I remember that place. but she also has a couple of moments where she's just sort of like overwhelmed by everything and very quietly, like very interesting. Mm-hmm. So why do they have this clown? Robbie doesn't like it. Is it Carol Ann's clown?
That's what I was wondering. Like, why is the clown in their room? Because Robbie.
Yeah. Do you think it's a gift from the grandparents? And they're like, you got to leave the clown in here in case they come visit.
So I had a clown statue.
Is it here right now?
No, it's not in the house. Nope.
Is it in the attic with your Macbeth fingers?
No. Yes. My clown and my Macbeth fingers live together. No, it was a ceramic clown and it belonged to my mom.
Okay.
And I had it in like a drawer, like a dresser drawer for the longest time. And then my sister thought it was cool. So I just gave it to her. But it like, on one side, it had a sad clown face. And on the other, when you turned it around, it had a happy clown face.
Wait, if you turned the head around?
No, the whole body. It wasn't a head. Like, it was,
okay.
Yeah.
So you could see a happy face with feet that pointed backwards?
No, it was like,
Or literally one half of the, was it like two-face?
No, it was like this, it had feet pointing on both sides. So it was like a two-sided clown.
Inside you, there are two clowns.
Inside you, there a happy one and a sad one. Fighting.
I hate that.
Anyways, yeah. I had that, but I had to keep it because, like, it was like a family thing.
Sure. Yeah. And where is it now? In hell?
In my sister has it.
Okay, good.
It's in hell.
Good.
I don't know where my sister has it.
BSD, Robbie's, like, covering up the clown, and there's a storm going outside, and... Steve, like, there's this really sweet moment where he, like,
count the thunder,
tells him to count between the thunder, and you'll know if it's like getting further away. We talked about this. Did you ever do that as a kid?
Oh yeah, I do it as an adult.
I still do too. Yeah, we had a really awful thunderstorm like a week ago.
We've had a couple since we watched this. We've had a couple of bad ones,
like really bad ones, and I found myself doing that. Like there was a thunderstorm the other night, and I literally sprang up from my bed and said, "Okay," like out loud, and started just like walking around the house checking everything, and that night is kind of where everything really starts to go crazy. We get the weird ghost hand out of the television, which is like this fun cartoony effect that I like. Carol Ann is like really enchanted by it.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquake.
Right. Yeah.
And Carol Ann says the most iconic line.
They're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Mm-hmm. And the earthquake is shot like really well. Like it looks like they're shaking the set, right? Like it doesn't feel like a camera thing.
Yeah.
It's like really jarring and everyone plays it really well. And we smash cut to this construction crew that's like digging the pool for them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice this until the rewatch. He's digging up. They dig up the cigar box that Tweety's in.
Yes,
it gets pushed back.
And I love, like, I didn't notice until we watched it for this show. I think you mentioned it before, like how funny this movie is. But there's tons of little like
business
like that you don't really notice right away.
There's that. There's like the one guy like peeking in through the window and like trying the coffee and eating the food. These guys suck.
No, they're because they also
hit on Dana.
Yes, they do.
But we get more great like family business, like the food fight at the breakfast table.
Mm-hmm.
There's Robbie.
Yeah.
Robbie holds up a spoon and says force field. Which I'm like 99% sure I have to have done that at some point in my life.
Yeah, I feel like you and Robbie have a lot of the same energy.
This kid is so good, Oliver Robbins. There was supposed to be a documentary about the Poltergeist curse that would like fall, he was like the main person in the movie. It was going to follow his career and like how Poltergeist had affected him. And I guess they never got funding for it or something. But,
so the kids are arguing here, right? Carol Ann and Robbie.
Yeah, mom asks, like, what did you mean about they're here? Mm-hmm. Carol Ann tells her, you know, the TV people.
The TV people.
Nope.
Nope.
Don't like that.
Throw the child out.
Bowl. Robbie's bowl explodes. Silverware's all bent. And they're all just kind of like, what the fuck is going on? But they're not scared yet. They're just confused.
And the mom thinks it's like neat.
Oh, yeah. Because we get the... She leaves Carol Ann on the counter, goes out of the room, and the chairs restack themselves, move multiple
like a
times.
Formation,
This was done.
She asked Carol Ann, right? She's like, "Did you do that?
Did you do that?" And she's like, "No,
no, I did not. You crazy lady."
This was done with no cuts. Like they literally the tracking shot where she walks over to like look under the cabinet and gets back up, and they are stacked perfectly. Mm-hmm. Crew members like scrambled in and did that like off
camera. I'd love to see that.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And it made me think of that moment in Ghostbusters where Bill Murray's like, "Right, no human could stack books like this."
Amazing.
But like Diane's immediately kind of into it. She's like, this is the TV people.
No, she's so
into
it.
Can you see them?
She's so into it that I'm like, you're insane.
You need to be a little more on guard, right?
Like, yeah. And the fact that like later when she's showing Steve.
Yeah.
Steve. That when she sets Carol Ann down on the floor and like whatever.
You were like, I would not use my kid as a guinea pig.
No, and the poltergeist like pushes her across the floor.
Carol Ann gets like a little like floor burn.
Yeah, she's like, that
hurt, sorry, baby. I should have given you a pillow or whatever.
Like, no. Like, this is where I was like, you're a bad mom.
Right. That's fair. But like, we also get to see, meanwhile, how great Steve is at his job, like selling real estate. Like, he's so charming.
Yeah.
Making a lot of like very cheesy dad jokes, which, you know, immediately endears me to somebody. And he comes home to like these shenanigans.
Right. And we find out too, like, the house is like in this development that he's been selling.
Right. He's like, we're in phase three or something like that. Because they're just constantly developed. And that's the other thing is that's kind of interesting about like the sort of mountain range, you know, area that they're in is they're clearly developing like ground that has been untouched for centuries. You know, there's so many fun little hints at something else before we get there. So Diane's showing him like, showing him how the chairs are moving across the floor by themselves. She's like drawn a little circle and like taped everything off. And she's explaining it to him while he's just kind of sitting there staring into space.
He doesn't know what the fuck is going on.
And there is a cut in the middle of a sentence that is it's just so funny. She's like, and then sometimes you feel like a tickle and then it smash cuts to them talking, asking their neighbor.
Yeah.
If there's been any disturbances. And like, I kept thinking like because they're cracking up. They're so funny in this scene. They're like,
I think I turned to you. I was like, are they stoned in this scene?
But they like, how hard would it be to ask someone about this?
I couldn't.
No. And I do love that Diana is just like, that night is just so pleased. She's like, this is just like another side of nature.
Yeah.
And Steve's like, fuck this.
I don't know what Diane is smoking, but I need some because she's just cool with everything.
Well, so this is also where we start to learn that this movie is like just built out of Spielberg's own fears. Because as a child, he was afraid of a tree in his yard and he was afraid of clowns.
Sure.
And we get Robbie being pulled out the window by a tree.
Yes.
A gnarly effect.
Wild. Yeah.
And the closet pops open. There's whispers. Like the sound design and this is really effective. And we were both like really crazy about this tornado effect that touches down.
Yeah. I don't know. I love all of these effects.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is really great.
It's very like, but it's like clearly like a cartoon tree or a tornado rather.
Sure.
It's, yeah. But it's, I love it. Like it feels unnatural and Carol Ann is taken.
Mm-hmm.
And like the parents come back to an empty bedroom. The kids are in a daze. And my favorite detail of this sequence that like really hit me hard.
Yeah.
The leaves plastered to the wall.
Yeah.
In the background from the storm. Like, having gone through a hurricane, right?
Sure.
Like, that is, like, I was just like, fuck, that's not something you see very often. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a great detail. And the mom, like, Diane panics.
Well, sure, yeah.
But she's like, the pool, the swimming pool.
Yeah, because she had mentioned earlier she was afraid that Carol Ann would sleepwalk into the pool before right. they, and she says before they have it filled, but I mean, I wouldn't wonder before they have it filled or after they have it filled.
Yeah, after they have it filled, it's full of concrete.
Right. Or water.
Right. But Robbie hears Carol Ann on the television.
The TV, yeah.
And he starts just losing it.
Yeah.
Screaming. The mom comes in. She thinks, oh, everything's fine. I hear my baby. Mm-hmm. And then everyone just kind of mm-hmm. realizes she's somehow
in the TV
talking to them through the TV.
She's drinking the electricity.
She is Gabriel. This is when she's sent away to the doctor. Now this is one of the first movies to actually explore the concept of EVP, which is where like basically voices of spirits can be picked up through electronic means. This is one of the first movies to really dive into that concept. Mm-hmm. And we get this sequence that it like almost feels like Ghostbusters, where Steve is meeting with the parapsychologists, giving them like this, he's muttering like he can't mm-hmm. believe what he's saying. And we are introduced to Dr. Lesh.
Yes. Dr. Martha Lesh,
played by Beatrice Straight, who is fucking incredible.
She is in a different movie, I feel like.
She is.
She's from a different time.
She won, by the way, I don't know if you know this, 6 years before this movie, she won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for the movie Network, a movie that she is in for 5 minutes and 2 seconds.
Oh, wow.
She leaves such an incredible impression. She holds the record for the shortest performance to win an Academy Award.
That's amazing.
But you're absolutely right. Like, she has stepped out. There's something ethereal about her performance.
Yeah.
But Dr. Lesh is like, she like checks to see if they're seeking publicity. He's sure. like, no, I don't mm-hmm. want fucking anyone to know about this. And we kind of see over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. This whole conversation, he's talking to Dr. Lesh and Marty, played by Martin Casella, who was Spielberg's personal assistant back in the day.
Yeah.
And Richard Lawson as Ryan. And so we don't see Steve's face until it cuts to him and he says, "We don't care about the disturbances. We just want you to find our little girl."
Yeah.
And that's the first time we see him in the scene, and it's clear he hasn't slept for days.
No, they all look terrible.
He's sweaty. Mm-hmm. He's got like dark circles under his eyes, and he's smoking a cigarette. Mm-hmm. He looks fucking cool, but also very sad.
Yes. And then I also love like they've like figured the shit out by now.
Yes.
They know how to communicate with either Carol Ann or with the spirits.
Right.
Like she communicated, like the lights move a certain way.
They've got it down to a science.
Yes.
Like,
and I
the
love
mom
it.
Has that bit where she's like, yeah, there'll be two more flashes mm-hmm. in like 30 seconds or yep. something like that.
Yeah. Is this where we get the guy? He's like,
talks about the toy car.
The toy car moving.
Yeah.
And he's like super pumped about it.
He's like, with the most incredible thing that they've recorded was a toy car. It took seven hours to move like 2 feet or something like that. And he goes, the event took 7 hours. And Steve goes, what did? And he goes, for the car to move. And he goes, And then he opens up the bedroom door.
Yes. And things are just flying around the room.
This sequence always stands out to me. I mean, it's like it's moving.
It's kind of bonkers.
It's goofy, but I like it.
It's a little goofy.
But it's lamps screwing themselves in and turning on. There's a mm-hmm. record playing itself.
It's very Mary Poppins.
It really is. It up to and including like the kind of rear projection, like mm-hmm. clip-y kind of look to it.
Yeah.
And this is one of, I think, maybe the best gag in the movie. Smash cut to Dr. Lesh struggling to lift
to drink
her cup.
Teacup,
her hands are shaking so bad. And meanwhile, Diane is just like, Steve's been wonderful. He's missed so much work.
Aww.
Like, But I love this scene.
How could you go to work when you're a kid stuck in the television?
Absolutely. Well, as we learn later, he's told his boss that we all got the flu.
We all got the flu, real bad flu.
Which I would believe if he showed up to a meeting sweating through his shirt. Like, yeah.
Sure.
Lesh explains the difference between a poltergeist and a haunting, which is a poltergeist usually latches onto one person and mm-hmm. they're concerned that whatever the spirit is, it is fixated on Carol Ann.
Right. It wants her life force.
And so they turn on the television, and this sequence obliterates me.
Oh.
I can't tell you how, like, this has not happened with any other movie we've done on this show.
How many times you cried?
I cried multiple times watching this movie.
Yeah. And no, when
maybe this scene the hardest.
When the mom Diane is talking to Carol Ann through the
Because they hear her. I feel like getting choked up. They hear her voice, and they've kind of like you said, like, they get some of this now. They don't know why it's happening, but they know how it's, like, what the patterns are.
They know the routine, yeah.
And so they've kind of accepted that this is how they can talk to her. Mm-hmm. And we hear her say, "Hi, Daddy."
Mm-hmm.
And Steve just kind of stands up and very tired, like, exhaustedly says, "Hello, sweet pea."
Mm-hmm. And then Dana is
cracking,
just in the corner crying, covering her ears.
Just excellent in this sequence.
So good.
And this is when Dr. Lesh tells them that they have to keep her away from the light.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, if she sees a light, she can't go towards it because it'll make her cross over and you'll never get her back.
Ugh, yeah.
And Carol Ann gets scared. We hear her say, "Somebody's coming." Mm-hmm. She leaves such an incredible impression on this movie with so little screen time. Like,
oh, yeah.
So much of Heather O'Rourke's performance is via voiceover,
mm-hmm.
because she's also not doing a lot of, like, the, obviously because of her age, she's not doing a lot of the crazy stunts and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Diane screams, "You bastards, she's just a baby."
Oh, it's so good. Her performance here is great.
And this is the part that, like, I can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a wind that blows through the room.
Oh,
and
yeah. And she's like,
I felt her pass through me.
And then she goes to Steve and Steve's like, "I can smell her.
Smell
and
my shirt."
Yeah, they start smelling the shirt. It's so good. It's so wonderful.
Full on crying.
You are.
It's like, it's this beautifully acted moment. And it's
Diana is just so freaking happy that she, like, felt her kid for a second. Like,
and it's not something that I feel like we've seen before or since in a movie like this.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things we talked about that we love so much about the Conjuring movies is how they really, especially the first two anyway,
mm-hmm.
really get into that family dynamic
yeah.
and the love that these characters share. But there's just, whew, nothing hits like this scene for me. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty that night says, "You know, I'm going to go. I believe that this is real,
mm-hmm.
but just to satisfy our curiosity, I'm going to go look upstairs and see what happens." And something blows through the house and he comes running down the stairs and says, "Something took a bite out of me." And they filmed this scene that wasn't used. There's this great interview, with Martin Casella on poltergeist3.com, where he talks about shooting this whole sequence where he opens the door and a force lifts him up in the air and throws him. And he's like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, "I spent like a couple of hours in a harness. We applied the makeup and all this stuff."
And they didn't use it.
They decided not to use it because they were like, well, at that point, like, we still don't want to show the beast.
Sure.
And so it was like they kind of came down to this thing where, like, do we lift him up and then cut to him coming downstairs, or is it more effective to have him hurt by some unseen force?
Yeah, for sure.
Which I like.
Yeah. We also didn't mention that before this all happened, Steve finds out that the land that the subdivision was built on used to be a cemetery or an ancient burial ground something.
Yeah. There's a couple of conversations with Mr. Teague, with his boss, where he talks about, like, how they've had to develop this new land.
Right.
And then later on, it's revealed that, yeah, we moved all the bodies. Right. Or we moved the cemetery.
Yeah, we moved the cemetery. Everybody was moved. It's totally fine.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is he's like, no one's ever complained about it until now. Because like there's this incredible moment where Steve looks at this cemetery where they're planning to put the next phase of the subdivision or whatever, and says, not much of a view, is it? And his boss literally says, like, yeah, well, we're gonna move we're it. Gonna it's move not sacred this. Ground.
Sure.
Like, we have permits.
We have permits. It's right. fine.
Yeah. But we get to the nighttime. Everyone's being very quiet. Marty's saying he's going to go check for leaks, but he's not going to go back upstairs.
No.
And this conversation between Diane and Dr. Lesh is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and again, like you're saying, it feels like something from a different time where the lighting over is like just over Dr.
Yes.
Lesh's eyes.
It's that halo.
This beautiful monologue where they're sharing brandy and she's talking about, you know, the ephemeral nature of life and wanting to know what's on the other side. And Robbie asks, if I die, can I go find Carol Ann?
Yeah. Like, I could not imagine, like, dealing with that as a parent.
No.
Like.
And occasionally we see these shots of Steve pretending to be asleep, but listening.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene ends with them saying, goodnight, Carol Ann.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's rough.
Meanwhile, Marty's eating a bag of chips.
Yeah.
I love old-timey logos and stuff, so seeing like the old chip bag was great.
Yeah.
And my next note here is cancer steak.
Cancer steak.
This is when the steak starts pulling itself across the counter and bubbling up from the inside.
I don't like it.
It's disgusting.
It's so gross. Everything that happens in the next few minutes is real gross.
He spits his chicken out because it's full of maggots now.
I cannot handle anytime there are like bugs in food in movies or sure. like maggots or things like that. I cannot.
I think that's normal.
Nope.
How many movies have we watched now where there's like a shop bathroom, like a shop sink, in a regular house?
Sure.
Like
you don't have a shop sink.
I don't
either.
But the Freelings do, and Marty goes in there to take his face off.
Like, this scene terrified me watched this movie, and I couldn't watch it this time.
So they do a couple of different shots, because the first shot is actually him like in makeup with blood pouring out of like pores in his face, and he said in this interview he said the makeup people spent 3 hours rigging me so that blood would seep out of my skin and then chunks of my face would fall off. But because it was being shot in a mirror, they rigged the wrong side of my face. Once I was dressed and ready to shoot, Frank Marshall, who was the second unit director, realized there was a mistake and sent me back to makeup. We shot the scene about 2 hours later.
Oh my gosh.
And so and that's just for like 2 seconds of screen time, because then it cuts to this dummy that just chunks are being pulled off.
I don't like it.
That's Spielberg's hands also.
Oh, wow.
So Spielberg is playing the hands that are pulling
That's awesome.
Face off. So fun. But yeah, and then we see Marty for a minute after this, but there's a scene later where Dr. Lesh is just like,
Marty's not coming back. No.
I don't blame him.
I wouldn't either. Yeah.
This is also where we get our kind of Ghostbustery scene with the smoke pouring down from upstairs and this female figure like floats down.
Yeah.
And everyone's excitement just kind of turns to fear.
Sure. Yeah.
And I love this sequence of them kind of watching the footage back, and Diana's just like, look at all of them. Like, they're just kind of amazed by it.
Sure.
So yeah, Dr. Lesh promises she's going to come back. They send
Dana and Robbie away.
Dana's going to stay with some friends. Robbie's going to go stay with his grandparents. The dog kind of gets silent permission to go with. Like, which is a sweet moment.
This is like a movie thing where like people put their kid in a cab and just send them away.
You don't do that?
No. Like, that's just like a thing that happens in a lot of old movies. This is how you end up at
Nana and Pop Pop's place.
Yeah, right? Because your parents sent you away in a cab by yourself.
Right, right. While they go on a carnival cruise.
Yeah.
There's this is also the fun bit where like the boss visits and Steve's trying to like keep him from seeing the haunting. Like the mm-hmm. lights are flickering, the piano starts moving. Who do you think plays the piano the most in that house?
I hope it's Steve.
That was my thought too.
I hope it's Steve. I hope Steve is a piano man. I hope he's a jazz man.
I think he plays a lot of Little Richard in the house.
I hope he just has a couple of drinks and yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a brand new bag. He's the guy who on New Year's Eve say like is like, all right, everybody, I'm gonna play Auld Lang Syne.
He's got a cigar hanging out of his mouth. Yeah,
100%. He's a cigar guy.
Yeah.
The T in Craig T. Nelson stands for Tinkling the Ivories.
I love it. So is this where we
tickling
get...
the ivories tinkling. Is the saying, not tinkling.
Tinkling.
I fucked up.
Tickle and tinkle.
So this is when Diane...
If you tickle someone too much, they'll tinkle.
Yeah, that's how you remember, right?
Anyways.
Diane tries to go into the bedroom.
Yeah.
And
I love this.
Yeah.
Where she's like, she's putting away laundry or something, and she opens the door and just like...
There's just some sort of roar.
And she just screams and cries against the door.
She says, I'm sorry. This was the first scene filmed for the movie.
Oh, wow.
So she's like there.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Right?
I can't even imagine.
That's the thing that always scares me about like, neither of us have done like a lot of film.
No, I look like I'm having a stroke anytime I'm on camera.
But like both of, like it's the weirdest thing shooting something out of sequence. Like yeah, I can't imagine starting there because she's unbelievable.
As a theater actor, I could not even imagine doing that.
This is also where we meet Zelda Rubinstein. As Tangina,
which you felt you had some feelings.
So it's interesting. So my feelings changed upon watching this the second time mm-hmm. and taking notes because how do you feel about Tangina, the character and the performance?
I have always her. She's what I remember from the movie. To be perfectly honest,
sure.
Like her and Carol Ann are the standout performances to me before I watched it for the show and
as an
notes
adult
and everything.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, this house is clean like that.
Yeah.
It's almost as iconic as
they're here.
Yeah.
I agree. When we watched it the first time, I remember saying something like, do you feel like she's too much
mm-hmm.
or like there was like the accent wasn't working for me or the delivery.
I feel like if that's what you do for a living, you're gonna be a little extra.
Well, and here's the, so she comes in and she goes, y'all mind hanging back, y'all jamming my frequencies. which is a great
which
line.
Which is what I say to my boss every
sure,
morning.
Sure. Can you move just a skosh? But as I watched the scene, I realized I think that's the intention is to throw you off immediately to like make you feel like, oh, because Steve acts like a dickhead
mm-hmm.
And he like thinks an answer toward her
sure.
when she asks why the door is locked. And then she reveals she can read his mind. And I think that that's the moment that she kind of brings it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost feel like the character is playing against your expectations.
I think so. And also we learn later, like, not that she, I don't think she goes into the situation with her own agenda, but once we really get into the nitty gritty and she's like doing the thing,
yes,
she does have an ulterior motive and tries to do some other things. So I think she's
almost kind of sinister towards the end of it, which I didn't even remember.
She's playing on a couple different levels. Like, I think she's just like floating above everybody.
And I think maybe part of it is because I remember watching the sequels as a kid. Have you seen any of the sequels?
I've seen the second one, but I don't remember any of it.
She's played much more as like just the, oh, we brought her in to take care of everything. Like she's suddenly the character that just knows everything. Yeah. And I think this movie has an ambiguity with Tangina that I think works really well.
Mm-hmm. To me, she just came off as just being over everyone's head. Like, she knows the ins and outs.
Because she's in two different worlds right now.
Right.
Yeah, at all times. And I think that that is totally what she's playing. Mm-hmm. And that didn't, I don't know. It hit me this latest viewing where I was very glad that I rewatched the movie, because I think that she's making some really interesting choices, and I think the script is giving her some very interesting levels that mm-hmm. characters like this don't normally have. She also totally sets the tone for characters like Lin Shaye's character in Insidious,
yeah,
and even the, you know, Lorraine Warren in the Conjuring movies.
Yep.
But she tells them Carol Ann is alive. And the ghosts are drawn by her life force. And there's this really, like, these really cool kind of flowery dialogue. Mm-hmm. They linger in a perpetual dream state.
Right.
And then she tells them about the thing that has latched itself onto Carol Ann. It lies to her. It uses words only a child can understand.
Yeah, the way she explains this is so terrifying. Good. It is terrifying, but it's so good. Yeah. Yeah.
To her, it is simply another child. To us, it is the beast.
Yeah.
And this is the moment where she finally, where she worked for me. This monologue, mm-hmm. which ends with, "Now let's go get your daughter."
Yeah. Let's go get your daughter.
Excellent. And this sequence, this is another scene that, like, they immediately get to work. They're like, mm-hmm. we need to draw Carol Ann to the light so that we can, one, help these trapped spirits cross over, which we discover is kind of what Tangina, like, surprises them with.
Right.
And two, we can get her close enough to kind of the edge of the living world to bring her back. It's this a little muddy.
This part of the movie where they're explaining what's going on kind of always got confusing to me.
Yes.
And then Diane gets upset because she has to tell Carol Ann to go towards
the light. Tangina says, "Tell her you're in the light." Mm-hmm. And Diane says, "Mommy's waiting for you in the light."
It's heartbreaking.
I hate you for that.
Yeah,
that
as line. A mom, like, I couldn't imagine.
I've never caught that line before, but mm-hmm. watching it with subtitles, because that's mm-hmm. what I have to do for this show so I can, like, take notes and stuff. She says, I hate you for this. It breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is where it kind of gets a little funky. We're doing a bunch of different tennis balls. Throwing tennis balls in to check and see if it goes through to the other side.
Right. Everything comes out goopy.
Yeah. Much like Vicky when Mary Lou possesses her. She goes through the chalkboard and comes out goopy.
All the same. Different stories, same goop.
Same goop, different movie. But I do love... Like, I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on this because we get a lot of shots of people looking into a light in the closet.
I'm going to say.
Say it.
This part of the movie drags for me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Tangina explaining what she sees. Mm-hmm. Like, she looks into this light and she goes, "She's at the mouth of the corridor." And I'm like, what corridor?
Yeah.
But I think the light is really effective because it's still building, like, a mystery for us. And we get this really fun bit where Diane is saying, I'm going to go get Carol Ann because mm-hmm. she's right there. They're going to tie a rope around her. Tangina, this is really funny to me. Tangina says, "You've never done this before."
Oh, yeah, that's a great little bit.
She goes, "Neither of you." And there's, like, a long pause. And she goes, You're right.
You go.
But then Steve is just like, "No, I'm going to go."
Such a great scene.
There's, like, a little argument between them. And she goes, "No, it's, like, it has to be me.
She won't come to you." Yeah.
They like, this kiss
it's
is
so
great.
Good.
Dr. Lesh comes in and sees them kissing, and she has this moment
of... She,
like,
melts against the wall.
It's, like, terror and awe and love.
She's just,
and
like, it's the best moment of her life.
She's just like, fuck, they're so hot. Like, Dr. Lesh really likes their vibe.
She does.
And so Diane goes into the light to get Carol Ann, and Steve panics, starts pulling... And we see the beast.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, this effect scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Like this was up there in like this wasn't supposed to happen kind of moments, like along with Nazis melting at the end of Raiders.
Yeah.
Like Steven Spielberg had a way of scaring the shit out of me when I was a kid in movies that were supposedly aimed at me.
Mm-hmm. PG, yeah.
Yeah. But Diane and Carol Ann come out through the ceiling.
Covered in goop.
They've been slimed.
You've been slimed.
They are Peter Venkman style slimed.
They get put in the bathtub.
Yes. And oh my gosh, when Carol Ann wakes up and says, hi, Daddy.
It's so cute. Like, and I feel like the goop makes her even cuter.
She's trying to just look through the goop.
It's so cute.
And God bless them. They are moving.
And
they're done.
And this is when, like, you still have, like, 20 minutes left in
the movie.
The thing.
So I watched this, the second time I watched it on Amazon with, which this might be how I need to start watching these movies. Mm-hmm. I watched it with Amazon X-Ray, which just displays trivia in the corner of the screen, which is great.
Yeah.
And, well, sometimes great. Literally, I started this movie on Amazon. As the Paramount logo popped up in the corner of the screen, it was like Heather O'Rourke died 4 years later. And I was like, why would you start with that?
Yeah. Put that at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. But this scene, it was like it popped up and said, from the moment Carol Ann is rescued to the house imploding, it's like a full 15 more minutes of insanity.
It is. Yeah. It feels like a whole nother movie.
It is. Yeah. Well, and that was what really drew me in, because when I saw this for the first time, my first experience was seeing that last 15 minutes.
Sure.
And so I was just like, well, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. I have to see the rest of it.
Diane has her great little white streak in her hair.
She looks like
now.
Rogue from the X-Men.
Looks awesome, yeah.
She's like, I thought it looked kind of punk.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, you go to heaven for a minute or purgatory and you come out with like some
streak.
Well, it's like looking like Missy Pyle and Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's like, she's kind of talked into dyeing her hair by Dana. Mm-hmm. So we get some malignant lighting while she goes to dye her hair.
What is the lighting in her bathroom?
It's wild, right?
It's straight red.
She's like
why is the lighting in your bathroom red?
Yeah. So Diane goes to dye her hair in Blade Runner. And like, also we were both just like shocked by how hot the bath looks.
Oh,
it's the room steaming. Is red and full of steam.
Steaming.
Like,
Diane wanted to melt her skin off.
Yeah. She's like, oh, that looked really good. What happened to Marty earlier? I should get in the tub.
I should do that.
And so meanwhile, while she's in the tub, shit starts going crazy.
Hits the fan.
Robbie gets strangled by a clown,
yep.
Which, by the way, this actor was getting strangled.
I think I read that, like, he was actually getting strangled by accident.
The mechanical clown like closed really tightly around his neck and he started screaming, I can't breathe.
That's terrifying.
And everyone on set thought he was improvising.
Yeah.
And then apparently what happened was he started to turn purple and Steven Spielberg like jumped up and said, fucking shut it down.
That's so terrifying.
Yeah, like, yes, absolutely. Ugh. Awful. Which is another like thing people point to where they're like, oh, these movies are cursed.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Diane hears the commotion downstairs and starts to go help them. And she's thrown onto the bed.
Yeah.
And then thrown up
into
on
the
ceiling.
Ceiling,
like Nightmare on Elm Street. 2 years before Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, by the way, done with, like, a rotating set. So they had her just kind of, like kind of crawl along the set while it turned.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie guts the clown, which is a pretty rad moment where he's screaming,
sure.
Like, I hate you, I hate you.
Uh-huh.
There's weird, like, lightning and tentacles sprouting from the closet.
The closet's going bananas.
Diane starts to go to their bedroom door and some kind of manifestation of the beast appears with like the skeletal structure.
Right. Kind of pushes her back.
One hell of a stunt, right?
Yeah.
Like when she gets like yanked backwards.
Oh, yeah. And she falls down the stairs, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And Carol Ann is just sitting there and says, no more.
No more, yeah.
Which, like, really hit me this time because I was thinking about, there's a moment earlier in the movie when they're, like, loading up the moving truck mm-hmm. where Diane says to Steve, she doesn't remember any of it. Mm-hmm. And this tells us she does.
Yeah.
And she's just been, like, trying to live with it.
Yeah.
So Diane can't get to the kids. She runs outside for help, falls into the pool.
This is where we get the skeletons.
Skeletons. So we watched an episode of Cursed Films on Shudder about the Poltergeist curse. And the funniest thing was, like, there was a lot of stuff they kind of dispelled where, you know, mm-hmm. as we mentioned, Dominic Dunn passed away. She was killed by her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Heather O'Rourke passed away because of a sort of
bowel obstruction.
Yeah, like yeah. a congenital defect. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that they never landed on, there is a rumor.
If these skeletons are real or not.
That these skeletons were real.
No one can answer that question.
And there were a couple of times in the movie where they're like, so one of the rumors about the movie is that real skeletons were used during yeah. production. Anyway, here's a conversation with the screenwriter. Like, it was the one part of the story that they just would not really address. So I believe it.
I think it's real. I 100% think those are real skeletons.
Jobeth Williams was terrified of shooting the sequence, not just because of the skeletons, but because of the lighting required for it. So she's in this mud pit full of water, rain pouring down, and they have to light the scene. Mm-hmm. So she was literally like, I'm so scared a light fixture is going to fall in here and electrocute me, kill me. And so Spielberg, who was on set most of the movie, said, just hopped in there with her. And he's like, I promise you, we've like taken every precaution. But if this makes you comfortable, he got in. He goes, now, if a light falls in, we'll both fry.
Oh, bless him.
Which I'm just like, what so a cute. G.
Yeah.
She finally gets back inside after the neighbors pull her out.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines in this movie, which is just so upsetting, is the neighbor hears the roaring.
Yeah.
And she says, what sort of sound is that?
Yeah.
It's just the specific phrasing is so scary. Yeah,
she doesn't know how to describe it.
And I am a sucker for a long hallway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, where it grows.
It
yeah.
stretches.
Yeah. Which also very Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes. You know what's so weird? Because I love A Nightmare on Elm Street. And after rewatching this movie, I was like, Wes, you were taking notes.
You were.
But what's incredible is Wes Craven did that with like a fraction of the budget.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm going to pour some oatmeal in these stairs.
It's gonna be great.
This is where I have in all caps, not the closetussy.
Oh, God.
Because we cut to this weird esophagus in the closet that's like sucking them in.
It's gross. I don't like it.
I mean, this whole sequence is just bananas, right?
Right. Where she's trying, like Carol Ann's holding onto the bed, yeah, right?
Which is apparently just a dummy.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wild. There's things flying around. The closet is desperately trying to just suck everything in. Much like Nathan with his drink right
finishing
now.
Finishing my first 75. Which, thank you, by the way.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to escape. Steve shows up. A coffin, like, pops up. Coffins are shooting up through the
ground. Up out of the ground. Like, what is... Like, this is where it gets... Like, that's...
It's a little goofy.
That's a little goofy for me.
Especially like, the one where the coffin opens and they're sort of like, hey. They wave.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
But I love Craig T. Nelson goes for it in this scene. Mr. Teague shows up. He grabs him by the lapels.
You didn't move the body.
You son of a bitch. You moved the cemetery. The way he screams, lies, lies.
It's so great.
Steve can't find his fucking keys, which is same.
The house is like literally going bonkers. Like Dana pulls up with some friends that are dropping her off.
She has hickeys all over her neck.
And she's like, what the fuck is
she starts just screaming immediately.
Yes, because like all the lights are flashing in the house.
Steve or Robbie yells, the house is coming.
Right. And like, and the dad pulls up with the car.
Yeah.
Dana gets in the car.
Yeah.
And they just peel out of there.
Well, before that, a coffin shoots out of the garage and a dead body lands on the windshield.
Right, that's right.
And they all scream and drive away. And I remember being just kind of astonished by the fact that the house crumples in on itself. Yeah. And there's this kind of like sound. Yeah. Like, I was so used to, at that age, like big explosive finales or whatever. And the fact that it's kind of quiet right there at the end is just really interesting to me.
And then I love the ending.
The last gag.
So good.
Get to that. They get to a hotel, go inside, and Steve pushes the TV out.
And it's like, it's just like a second. The door shuts. There's like a half second. And then you don't even see him.
Yeah.
You just see the TV being pushed out.
That's right. Yeah. And I love, like, normally in movies like this, this is a question I've asked a few times on the show. Mm-hmm. What is their life now? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, also, like, Dr. Lesh has said, I have to show our footage to academics.
Right.
A whole neighborhood watched a house implode and go into another dimension.
The house is no longer there. It's just an empty lot that people are... Yeah, like, it's... What happens?
But normally that drives me insane.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is so much about this family that to me, I love... That it doesn't matter what's next because they're together and they're all right.
Right. Yeah.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
I think it's my favorite thing about our show is that
just say the name of the
say movie. The end. Say the name at the end. This movie's undeniable, right?
No, it's great. I think it's a wonderful movie.
I don't even think we need to really go into recommendations because it is a perfect film.
It. If you haven't, you need to.
And honestly, so I remember, it's funny, I saw the remake in theaters.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at the time, like, that's fine. That was all right, right? And then rewatching it now, or rewatching this now, I'm just like, I think I said as the credits rolled when we watched this, I was like, the remake can eat my ass. Like, this movie's perfect. I think something along those lines. Yeah, I would absolutely recommend it. It's so wild that this became... I mean, it's undeniable that this is a classic. It's just weird that this became a franchise.
Yeah.
Because it kind of tells a complete story. Did you know there's a TV series?
No.
There was a TV series called Poltergeist The Legacy that ran for like 4 seasons. It's like 80 episodes.
4 seasons?
On like the Sci-Fi Channel. Has nothing to do with the movies.
Weird.
Like, they just use the name, basically.
It's weird.
And it was like a kind of X-Files-y kind of show, I think. Mm-hmm. I never watched any of it. But what I did watch were the fucking great outfits in this movie.
There were some really good ones.
And, oh, those are killer threads. We're going to pick our favorite outfits from Poltergeist. Yeah. Ashley, what you got?
I got to go with the... as you know, I am big in being comfortable.
Sure.
I like a big tee. So I got to go with Diane's big t-shirt.
I knew you were going to pick that when she dyes her hair. Yeah. It does look comfy, though.
It does. It's like a big jersey.
I also went for comfort.
Okay.
And I got to go with Steve's cardigan that he wears when he goes to talk to the parapsychologist.
Such a good cardigan.
It's an incredible look.
Yeah.
He looks exhausted, but he also looks very comfy.
It's almost as good as the grave digging cardigan that What's-His-Face wears.
What's this now?
What is that? What was that movie where we had a movie we reviewed and you were like, he put on his grave digging cardigan.
Oh, I can't remember. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Was it Mary Lou? Was it?
Yes, it was Mary Lou. Yeah. Yeah. The principal puts on his grave digging cardigan. That's right. So I love a cardigan moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Poltergeist. Good title.
Pretty good title.
Pretty undeniable. But if we had to rename it, that's a better title. What would you call it?
They're Here.
That is also my alternate title. There's nothing else close to it.
Yeah.
This Poltergeist is a perfect title.
It's so good.
For a perfect movie.
It is.
Say you got really upset by it. So you said this one didn't really scare you.
Not as a grown up, no.
Interesting.
And I watched it.
Even as a mom.
Yeah, I watched it like maybe like a year or two ago. When I was still an adult. and
recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but no, it didn't scare me.
Oh man, there was something about it that just like really unnerved me this time. But speaking of horror movies, you dropped a bombshell recently.
What'd I say?
Talking about your dad.
Oh, yeah.
Who we've established on this show was like your horror guru when you were a kid.
My dad said he does not like... Yeah, I was at my parents' house a month ago-ish. Uh-huh. And I was drinking coffee with my dad.
Yeah.
And I was talking about the show. And he's like, yeah, I don't like scary movies. They're too scary.
What the fuck?
And I'm like, what the fuck, Daryl? Get out of here. Like, I have watched every scary movie with you.
He's like, no, I thought it was funny that you were scared.
Yeah, he said he did it. That's he watched so them funny. Just to scare me when I
That's
was a kid.
That's so funny.
My dad. That's wild. My dad for you. He's the blob.
He is the blob. As we established in our first episode.
I don't even think that was this show. I think that was Two Drinks.
Oh, it might have been Two Drinks and a Haunting.
Yeah.
So maybe Poltergeist got you really scared. Maybe you're like Ashley's dad and you think scary things are scary and you gotta cool down with something. That's a relaxing movie. Ashley, what would you recommend that people watch after Poltergeist?
I had to go with another movie where Craig Nelson is taking care of his family.
Oh, yeah.
The Incredibles.
Oh my
He's
God.
He's Mr. Incredible.
Of course.
He is Mr. Incredible.
Yes. One of my favorite movies.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. So The Incredibles.
Absolute great choice. So I was thinking, I kind of came around to Zelda Rubinstein in this movie, and mm-hmm. I was thinking about another movie that she's in, and I was trying to think of like what could be better than Poltergeist. And the question I was really asking myself was supersonic, idiotic, disconnected, not respected. Who would ever really want to go and top that? And the only thing that could top Poltergeist is Teen Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Which mm-hmm. also stars Zelda Rubinstein.
So good.
Which I think we should do sometime.
I think we should, too.
Yeah. Teen Witch and The Incredibles are your homework movies, everyone. What a good collection.
Right?
So next week we have a movie I'm very looking forward to.
I am so pumped about next week.
We've been thinking a lot about our friend Bruce Willis, yeah. who recently announced his retirement from acting. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about a movie to do and hilariously didn't consider his most iconic horror movie performance, but we did go with next week's film, Death Becomes Her,
which is one of my favorite movies.
I love this movie so much.
We didn't, and I love that we didn't think about The Sixth Sense until after.
And we've already done a Shyamalan.
Yeah,
that's the fucked up thing. So, but
we were
this
both immediately like, Death Becomes Her.
No, I think I texted you and I was like, "Should do you want to do Death Becomes Her?" Yeah, no, it's a great movie. featuring one of his weirdest performances,
but such a good performance.
Absolutely. And really looking forward to that. So guys, go watch Death Becomes Her. Mm-hmm. In the meantime,
yeah.
if you have any recommendations for horror movies that we should do on the show, mm-hmm. you can email us at ohthatsascarymovie@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find us at ohthatsascarymovie on Instagram or OTASM Podcast, OTASM Podcast on Twitter. And I think that's it.
I think that's everything.
So
that's it and that's all.
That's it and that's all. So until Death Becomes Her,
be good.